Hello, everybody. Good morning, and welcome to the committee meeting.
Oh, sorry,
I really request that we commence with our meeting. Let me just indicate right from the beginning that Honorable Khatebe and myself have to be out of here by at least 10 past 12 or 4 past 12 if we are late. Because we are running, unlike just attending a meeting, we are running another meeting at 10 past 12 and 30. We have that pressure of time, please. So those who are going to make presentations, Richie, just see how you're going to navigate your presentation. So that by 10 past 12 or 4 past 12 we're out, the the agenda is before us. Let me start with apologies. Where Ubulbaban? I should have dedicated somebody else to get him in. I find the one who comes and I used to go. Apologies. Honourable members and colleagues, we are going to defer the item on apologies. Babalo is fetching Dr. Golan outside. He's starting the security later to bring him in. Then we can attend to that item later. Well, because this is our meeting, we can attend to that, and then he also can fill us in. I'm taking it that he has got the written apology. Are you agreed to that? Okay. Then, under the adoption of the agenda, we actually have two principal agenda items. That is a briefing by the department, the DG is here. And then 5 and 6 are more or less the same thing, and I'm going to explain what we mean here. The briefing by the department on the current political situation in South Sudan, the one part of it will be done by the DG. And then there's Dr. Vasu Kounde, who has been involved for quite some time in that area even before our deputy president got involved in South Sudan. So he has other details that we can fill us in on. Members will remember that I have said that from time to time we'll invite experts that can come and fill us in on certain matters so that we can be more and better educated around this. It will be BRICS one day, the other day it will be on AGOA, the other day it will be on the European Union, the other day it will be on Africa as Africa, and on any other matter. So for today, we are going to have it. So Ulubabalo has gone out to fetch it. Then he's going to speak to number, to item 6, that is Dr. Vasu Kounde. Honorable Kalyan, yes, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your comments bring me to the point that I raised in a meeting about 3 weeks ago with regards to a calendar and a program of action. That has not been forthcoming, and I like that you want to invite experts, but I also like that I should know when this is going to happen. We get a meeting memo on Monday, there is going to be a briefing by the department. No hard copies of the document, get an email yesterday after 3. So, Chairperson, this is not how the committee should be functioning. I would like to know the program of action is, and it's not even on the deadlift. If I think it's problematic, because the deadlift gives you your forward planning. And I'd like to know why this meeting is not scheduled on the deadlift. I hope you can provide me with an explanation, otherwise I won't take it up with Chairman Sonic. Other committees that are sitting right through the end of June, the program is there, the topics are there, and so on and so forth. So I'd like, sir, that we have a program presented to us, and secondly, I'd like to have an explanation why our meetings are not scheduled and included on the list. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalyan. When you would remember last time when you raised this matter, I said that we were supposed to have planned for a strategic plan of the committee, and all of the things that you are speaking to will appear once we have the strategic plan of the committee. But the colleagues I work with in management, the Gunewo and the committee secretary, and wait, I'm looking for that. And then said that we were waiting for Parliament to finish its own strategic plan before all other committees could devise their own strategic plan. Well, with regard to the exact list, why it is not there, it's an administrative and operational matter. I think it's a witness in the secretary, and the Wabalo is not in here to explain that. I can only apologize for that one. But once Parliament has presented its strategic plan, now we have agreed that we must convene our own session, finish our strategic plan so that everything can be clarified what will happen where. But regarding who will be invited to come and speak, I don't think it will be part of the strategic plan. It will not say who will come on which specific day. It will say that from time to time, the first person can be or should be invited to speak on a specific question. Now, when we got a person, we will then indicate, sorry, Paul will come and speak on that specific plan. It is good for the community to have people like that. That's one particular person. Does it, are you concerned?
Yes, I am. And Parliament presented its plan this morning. So I hope that by some of the business day, we will know when we're going to be meeting up.
You're right, yeah. Absolutely right. And I hope you know you and the Baba have okay, colleagues, let's then proceed. Can we then hand over to the DG for the presentation? We are, is it 20 minutes late? Yeah. So, we call it the brief over to the DG.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, and honourable members, for once more giving everybody the opportunity to come and brief our members about our work. Okay, we have asked us to come and brief the honourable members about the performance information of fourth quarter, financial report, fourth quarter, and then that's fund fourth quarter. Okay, you have before you the detailed presentation. As was the case with the previous report, our company is here by the chief director, dealing with the Africa, first on program one, performance information of first quarter. Okay, this quarter, we have been dealing with the senior management and other groups in the department. And I must say to the honourable members that we worked very hard to try to deal with within the 4 months we are recorded by the government. So we have now improved from 11 months to around 4 months. We put more effort into this. That was the second key thing was to review the structure department. You know, we should have done this in 2006. They reviewed the structure in 2006. In fact, when one arrived at the department, although I've been there, we found that we have not deposited any structure of ERCO with the DPSA. So for the last 18 months, we're dealing with a new structure, with the new sign off at the end of March. So now we have a structure of ERCO realigned with the program, the finances, and the medium term plan, and the NDP. So there was sort of aligned. The other thing that one member of raised in hand was the payment of the service provider subscription date. In the last 2 months, we have done 100%. So we have developed a system where, on average, 99, but in the last 2 months, we have done that within 30 days. All the products have been paid in 30 days. So it has been a big of improvement. As you can remember, program one, the appropriation was 1.3 billion. That's what we gave us at the beginning of the last financial year. On program two, international relations.
Yes,
is the mechanism and framework used to deepen relations with other countries and organizations through bilateral commissions, joint commissions, and the joint cooperative council. And this is by the president, deputy president, and also by the ministers, deputy ministers, director general, and deputy general. So this mechanism is the one that really deepens the relations and make sure that we contribute to our overcharging of creation and connecting with our country. So in the reporting, we did plan for the 34 structural mechanisms to achieve the 9. And some of these was because our partners are opposed. We had a plan, a high-level meeting, where Chief 38 again was because of past minute cancellation laws during that time. Unfortunately, in this area, it's not only us, we always have partners with us who will say, okay, then they change voter for the election, or calamities, or change of government, change of minister, so we have a lot of changes taking place. But in other areas, we really overachieved what we can for. Like you can see that in terms of the number of ministries and the development. You gave us 3.1 billion rand appropriation on this thing, and the very least 25 million rand. Now, the international relations chapter, part of that was to, for us as the country to report the five government priorities of Africa. For example, in the area of trade, agriculture, education, and then the new frontiers of economy, the green economy. We are putting a lot of things, a lot of new relationships built around the green economy. And you see the next step in various parts of the world is to look for cooperation, for knowledge, understanding, training around the green economy, and also around the green economy and around the knowledge economy. So whatever we do now, we streamline that into our work. And more and more, we are also moving towards Latin America, participation around that. The third one is just on slide 7, is the area around our board. This has been talked about, and I'm sure that you have seen from economic cluster. This is one of the key areas that we believe that everything must be done by all countries and parties, all the DTI, to ensure that we do our goal unconditional, so that we continue to have the benefits out of it. As well as helping the folks and start to then come back into our goal tomorrow. President is out and it's been threatened. We have goal because of these conditions they have to meet for them to continue to try. So, three countries in SACO, that are in and around, Switzerland and ourselves, we're still understanding from our political association what would be the acceptable level on which we need to do that. The other area that I'm dealing with the question of tourism to the outreach. We have our level best, we testified in there for a lot of tourism promotion activities. We are also discussing now, you know, with the relevant department about the different concerns. Areas for reasons and other things around the area of our leadership on program 3 is international cooperation. Now during this as you all must know, we are members of the Human Rights Council. We have been attending the human rights activities in which have played a critical role in trying to advance the human rights of people of the world everywhere, including minorities and people of Palestine and Western Sahara. But there is a new issue that we have been dealing with, issue of albinism, question of albinism. As South Africa, we have been asked to give an input in how to resolve this issue, as well as this intensive negotiation. We have started from October last year, I remember, until now. Very intensive negotiation, as you are aware, as we speak now. Everybody is assembling in Berlin, in Germany, to try to find some agreement towards COP21 in this month and in Paris. So our team of experts is sitting there. And part of what we have been trying to do in this quarter was to sustain the Durban outcome. So the Durban platform is a base on which the world is going to potentially be an agreement on that. So this is our leader, and the Circo, GIA, and other departments. The other important issue during this period, I remember, was us taking over the agenda of China in terms of the co-development agenda and how we marshal these 138 countries to have made an impact on the Millennium Development Goals in the forthcoming UN summit in September in New York. So we are the chair of this, and even yesterday in Berlin, as a chair of Business of China, we asked to make a substantial discussion with the U.S. Issue into unlocking the potential building blocks for the outcome of the COP21 in Paris, as well as some form of understanding the potential outcome of the summit in New York, Stranger Military Organizations in New York, as you have up the road towards towards the post-based development agenda. The other issues under this conditional cooperation is the issue of the AU summit. The last, ever since South Africa was asked to host the summit in Denver, we brought resources and called the Intergovernmental Committee to prepare for the summit. We can report under this quote that these things we have set up and prepared logistics, environment. I'm saying there is no load shedding, we are told. So that our guests will be happy. The theme of this year, actually, why we only thought we should host, was because the theme is the Year of Women Empowerment, Development Towards Agenda 2063. And as I said, that this country should agree to host the summit. So in the court under review, this is what has been mostly as a country on this issue. Of course, also under this issue, Chair and honourable members, we have not lost sight of the need for peace and stability in the continent. So we have participated in a number of meetings for the region of conflict in South Sudan, the DRC, Middle East, as well as assisting Nigeria with Boko Haram through other means. And during this period, in the rubric of strengthening democracy in the continent, we have led solid visions to observe the election, and most of some of the honourable members are part of this delegation to observe the elections in Lesotho and Zambia in the year. Now, in the area of South-South cooperation, North-South cooperation, and we have the understanding that we have a particular focus on the ocean economy. We have sort of reinvigorated the Indian Ocean Region Association, both numerous countries, literally the Indian Ocean, to organize Arnold Slide number 10, so that we can begin to create some systems, framework, and policies on how to manage trade, investment, environment around the Indian Ocean. And what I've just reported before, during the last meeting, we were endorsed as the vice chair of IWAC. And in 2017-2019, we took over as the chair of this very important organization. It's an emerging sub-regional or regional association, like many others, but this kind of creating a network of countries around it. In the same example, in the last 4 months, during this whole quarter, we've been having numerous meetings in parallel to strategy on economic partnership of the BRICS that will be adopted by the head of state on the 9th of July in Ofe, in Russia. It's very, very important to remember that we have as a BRICS country to agree on the broad framework of
how we cooperate in communication. These are the key to the prayer. We did report in the last, during the third period, that four of these countries are now part of the top 20 economic powers in the West. And therefore, there's been a document circulating that we need to finalize. More or less, this document is looking into our complementarities, on our potential, and by our motto is areas of cooperation. So this is what we've been doing in the fourth. Of course, you gave us a budget of around 45 billion, and you can see the variance of 19 billion, mainly because of the foreign exchange fluctuation. And the program four, these are services, protocol services, public services. In this area, normally, you see our members, we tend to overachieve our target, because in the process, additional work is given to what we propose to start. Or sometimes we have to react because of particular issues, especially on the range of South Africa. There's a case of media briefing statement. You see there's also achievement because we have to respond to the issues as they come. And the same thing goes for the question of protocol services. I mean, just the beginning, in the January to March period, there have been so many heads of state coming to South Africa unplanned. One day they come, there's been a series of heads of state. So first of all, they have to respond to some of these things are unplanned, but justifiable so in the interest of peace and stability in the continent. We gave us an amount of 26 million, including this area, and we have spent almost close to 99% of the money. What we then do under this program, almost every other week, we try to organize the media briefing by our minister, deputy minister, to inform the public, to inform our people on what we do. During this period, were two public participation programs by our executive, as well as by the. So that chair, in short, what then follows is the figure which have gone through with you in the last quarter. I mean, this is the final figure of the year. So there's no much changes in this figure as we give you on the 2014-2015 financial year. Safe to say that there's been 8% of our money. And you explained that the variance was because we had programs, multi-year programs, like building of high commission in Lilongwe, Malawi, High Commission in Narazara, Tanzania, and a combination of other programs. So because of this, we do not spend all the money. So some of this money is out of the treasury. I wrote to the treasury to ask us to roll over this money so we can complete this program. These are my TM programs, so to say. So the total expenditure of our members was 45.9 billion, in other words, 98%. And I just explained why we are 2% lower than the expenditure. We under spending on credit infrastructure projects because, as I say, in some areas was because of problems we had with the service providers, and in some areas was things that were that you could not control. On page 16 is the details now of what has happened in the Hague and in Darazala. On page 17 is Lilongwe, the delays that are caused in the Lilongwe. And on program 2, we explain why we overextended that area. We extend when we get twice because of the rand depreciation. So we have to go to the treasurer to ask for assistance. And have not got all I can needed from the treasury to deal with the exchange. Program 3, I'm attending the result of the Office of Commission for PNT because you've not concluded. So as long as you concluded, I don't have that. And I have to hear, remember, there was a concern that our host agreement with TPF expired. And we did explain to the executive that it was not accurate. It was not expired. In fact, if you look into the convention, once it's signed, it's an expiring date. But what has happened was that PAP was renegotiating additional benefits well and above that they gave them in 2003. Campbell, now they wanted what is called LRP. They're going to be the last also to get immunities and privileges. Now you recall that the only certain category of officials do get immunities. But if you hire a Zambian as a cleaner in South Africa, you hire a Zambian as a security here, you hire a Nigerian as a driver here, as a local staff, the Nigerian cannot get immunities and privileges. Now, there are areas because we have an explanation to them. Like we have in our own countries. The LRP work in our missions there. Now, this is a Geneva Convention. So we thought, no, we cannot have that type of privileges. So this is ongoing. In fact, that is in the annex. It's not even the main part of the body of the agreement. It's in the annex. Let's talk about this. Thank you so much. Now, Chair, in the hard portfolio, that is on page 20, this has been sort of an albatross for some time. But this time around, Chair, from the records we have and the promoters been doing, it seems now, Chair, we, after many years, the software, we have managed to deal with this issues appropriately. As you can see, Chair, in terms of page 21, the total number of assets and custodians and the total value of the assets. Now, Chair, you see the value of our assets, 5.1 billion, now is 1 billion. They fell by 4 billion, that is page 22. It was during this quarter discussed with the treasurer. There was an issue with the treasurer and the Peter General, which says, no, if the assets you bought them before 2002, the value of those assets should be 1 rand. It should be a rand. He says, no, if I sell that asset, I'm going to get less than 2 million euros. 3 billion rand. So I know there is 1 rand. But after negotiating with the account general, the general account treasurer, we then agreed that okay, our assets will be, some of them will be in 1 rand. Some of those assets we bought them 50 years ago, when those assets were not tradable. So it is a very difficult at that time in the 40s, 50s to say how much was this. They say in that case it's no longer 1 rand. Now this is not terrible. It's a directive from the people who handle the money. So that's why you see in this court, you see how hard it has been developed now, 4 billion to 1 billion. So we said, okay, the National Treasury, the General, and they have discussed the issue going forward because it does impact on the true reflection of the assets we have. So I thought, I remember that in relation to that issue, so that the maximum is engaged with the general and the relevant treasury people, we should stand on this one. That your assets, which is supposed to overnight, have been reduced drastically by almost 4 billion. Okay, that was the fourth quarter report. On page 24 is the performance report of the ARF. Check to see there was not really much movement on the ARF, except that two project proposals, the process for ARF for meeting, only two projects so far. But what we can report that we have four ARF committee meetings with a project and recommendation, and we have now regular scheduled meetings for this. So of all the programs, there's been 100% investment for the CR. In terms of his CRD, his community development program, we have also developed all the funds. In terms of capacity building, we have developed all the funds. And in terms of what we have, they are, as we speak, at the end of the fourth quarter, we had a amount of 1.86 billion rand, and through your assistant chair, we have 237 billion. But we have also received interest of 100 cells. This money is with the Reserve Bank. And we committed this amount of money that we have to disperse. And that leaves us with the 1.4 billion SEC in our bank. Now, on this is the details, where this money has gone. That is where the money has gone. For South Sudan, for you hear what we should plan for Namibia, we're rolling it out now, for Palestine, for Ebola, and for the Afrique and MISCA program, as well as on Reach 28, asset contribution, and then SOTO, and any subject election of the it is where the funds have been committed. Thank you very much. That is the report, then, in short, of the government. Information for the fourth quarter 2014-2015. Thank you, Chief.
Abasada, Sheila, thank you very much. You really have been able to preserve time and try to catch almost all the salient details that the committee needed for the fourth quarter, which is the last part of the financial year 2014-2015. I'm going to allow for engagement, but before that, let me indicate that it is my privilege and honor to welcome Ambassador Willie Ntsapho, as well as Dr. Basu Kounde to our meeting. Dr. Kounde is going to make a presentation on the item of just before you ask your question, I want to ask mine. Very urgent. Why is South Africa being asked to make an input on albinism? It reminds me of an assignment that was given to Lebowatle. I remember what I'm talking about. That was given to us as a leadership of the then Northern Transvaal of the ANC, which is Limpopo now. That we must input the NEC of the ANC on witchcraft. You must develop a position paper and tell us what do you think we must do about this phenomenon. And we asked why. They said, no, there's a lot of bending of which is old ladies and old men have been bent in the hope of, and the presentation was made by Sydney for my. You know, we laughed at this, and then we realized later it was serious. It was a division of the leadership. Now, I'm just surprised that we are not banning albinos in South Africa, and yet we must develop a paper. I just thought about that aspect. Over to you, Honorable Kayan, on the more serious note.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, just following on from your comment about the witchcraft, I was going to ask the question about albinism, why and what. But in yesterday, in the debate, there was one MP, I don't know if you sat through the entire debate yesterday, but there was one MP who made an assertion about the play singer and the waving of a stick and what motive that person might be waving and disarming people. So we can laugh about it, but I mean, people think that way, and I mean, my door fell open, but anyway. Right, let's start. Gigi, with regard to the visas and the birth certificates and BRICS, because China is a big player, and I'd like to know your view on the impact of these regulations, because China Airlines has cancelled all its flights to South Africa. So it's impacted on tourism. What is the latest with GOA? Have we signed the agreement? Have we renewed it? We still cling he said, and I'm going to do. So if you on the 13th, in September, what is the latest on that? With regard to the Pan-African Parliament, I think you're just ingenious by saying that the agreement is still in force. We just had a two-week sitting of the Pan-African Parliament. And I must tell you, as South Africans sitting there, when Beto Amadi, the president, the former president, presented the report, the section on the Pan-African Parliament was, I felt ashamed. And in fact, I asked the person who was speaking on my behalf, when I wrote my speech, to mention it. Because it doesn't talk about immunities and privileges. It says that the agreement has lapsed. It needs to be revised. Furthermore, certain things that were promised has not been carried out in terms of IT and all that. I promise you, for the 2 weeks that I'm here, I don't even go to the office because it's not a project. There is no IT. There is no Wi-Fi. And working there is almost impossible. And he maintains in his report that although there has been meetings with the officials from Durko, there has been no resolution. Through your chair, what I'm going to do is forward the copy of that report to you, and if you can then make it available to the GG, because he has to respond to what is in President Amadi's report. And then my last question, South Africa is due to send a delegation next week to the ACP-EU joint sitting. And even the cabinet wants to hold a referendum on whether they should leave the EU or not, what is South Africa's position on it? It would be interesting if you, not today, but you could provide us with that information, so that when the delegation is faced with us next week, we actually do have knowledge of that. And then my last point, with regard to cordial relationships between us and other countries in Africa, specifically with Nigeria, I would like to know your view, sir, on the comments made by your spokesperson, who authorized and signed off on those statements, because Honorable Jeffrey Lebe has to say that this is not the official position of South Africa. So inflammatory statements by the spokesperson on behalf of Durko is not a good thing, and I'd like to know your comments on that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khatebe. You are noted, Honorable Kenya, and Honorable Mukhalar in that order, Honorable Aput in that order.
All right, thank you, Jonathan. First of all, I would like to appreciate the good report as presented on the department and the ARF. But the first question I'd like to ask, Chair, is the issue of how clean our books tonight. We've finished the financial year now. Are we going to have any problems from the side of the Auditor General as we had last year? I think that one must be clarified coming forward. And then on the issue, on the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, I'm really interested how you do process the issue there. Because I'm very happy that the issues of Pakistan were dealt with at that council. But I'll just make one example, Chairman. The issue of the Yarmouk and the refugee camp in Syria, where there were 120,000 refugees there. As we are speaking, there are about 18,000 left, of which they are still exposed. I was very shocked last week when I saw the footage where the ISIS had actually butchered some of the people from that refugee camp. How, as South Africa, is a part of that? How can you bring those issues to the attention of the United Nations Human Rights Council? Because I don't feel that as the country which values life, that we even abolish capital punishment, that under our watch and then when we are around, such impunity can occur. Really, how can the department help those people in their movement as of speaking now? Because this is only 18,000 left, and when you look at that camp, it's right in the middle between three and four feet on the Arab countries, ISIS. Yeah. So they can found in the crossfire as the Arabs were slaughtered. For the first time, I saw people slaughtered like sheep. It's so barbaric. Yeah. But those 18,000 people, I think that they can collateral damage for the war. But I don't think that in South Africa we can sit back and
can the department do something about that in particular? As a matter of speaking. And then, Chairperson, on the other issue is the issue of Boko Haram. Can the DG explain how did you help Nigeria on that issue? Because from what I know, is that it was the people of the aggressive outcome which were there. And then if it is the people of the aggressive outcome, it is because it's legal. Because we've got a law in the country. This is that the South African citizen cannot be involved in the foreign laws, in the foreign war. So how did that assist you? Is the part of the aggressive outcome part of that system? Can the second, the DG come later on about? On the issue of the African Renaissance Fund, is the issue of, we are still going to discuss the issue of South Sudan. I see that the work allocation is around to South Sudan in helping it. Really, for our definitive proof for that presentation in South Sudan. I've got to go to three questions.
Thank you. Honorable Ken.
Thank you, Tiji, for the presentation. My question will be on this phone program on the bullet that talked to the structure, bullet 2, that's the structure now which is in place. My question would be, as you know, that that meant the production of staff. Just to know what happens now to the DDGs. Are they deployed now that the structure is now reduced? On page 8, on social development, I don't see APRM here. I still talking about NEPA report 2015 development on the second page on page 8. I don't see anything that talks to APRM. Maybe what is the reason not even included there when I'm talking about Nepal? On page 9, the focus on development. I'm also going to talk to the Boko Haram issue that has just been elaborated on by other honorable members. Do you get really cooperation? That's my question, just to check if you really get cooperation from Nigeria on this instance. Noting that most of the instances we don't get cooperation from there, from that country. On financial report, there is understanding due to PEP offices accommodation not being concluded and public diplomas on page on program 4, the claims from the department, from the partner of the department. Now looking at that, yes, I understand that understanding make it easy for those departments that overspend to get the rollover. But my question will be, why is the budget reduced if there are these unforeseen circumstances? Also, as you look on page 7, that you talk about the shifting of rent against other major currencies and the impact of the foreign exchange rate fluctuation, then always these unforeseen circumstances, why do we reduce the department this time around? And lastly, on ARF, on Ebola, I don't know, on peace, on ARF, on Ebola, I don't know. Can we get a breakdown? Can we get a breakdown? Because I understand that that amount that we have been on humanitarian assistance. But now I don't see the breakdown of the countries, really. I only see the amount that is that lump sum, which is not really. And we break down to see which countries, therefore, with Ebola, we do assist. Lastly, on the South African additional assessment, also on ERF, how often is what we paid, and what is this additional assessment, member contribution, and how is it over? Is it paid yearly, annually, or what?
Mahalava is going to follow. My worry is that we are not winning with regard to whether it is Ebola or Ebola, since all the time it becomes something else. But so it's domestic share, Thank you, GG, for the presentation. I just want to ask on administration, Chair. There have been some few allegations that we've seen around in the newspaper concerning our ambassadors. One was the Lee scandal in Ghana, the other was the ambassador in Cameroon who could not retain a department for staying in the hotel. What is the status of that? We have also had the allegations against the DDG for public diplomacy being involved in a job propel scandal. Are you aware of those, and what is the department doing about those allegations? And secondly, Chair, I have been receiving some complaints in terms of our diplomatic posts. People waiting for too long to receive their visas, especially from the UK and the Chicago mission. What is the delay in terms of diplomatic posts that must be, and whether the situation has been addressed? In terms of our international relations, the high-level visits, do most of the high-level visits that we conduct in terms of bilateral engagement yield the necessary FDI that we would require from those high-level statements? So in essence, do most of the visits that we conduct for bilateral relations yield the requested FDI that we require? And not in terms of the ARF, lastly, yes, in terms of the ARF, is the issue of whether the reporting from these projects that we have supported is forthcoming to the department. I'm looking here, we had $100 million that we donated to Namibia for humanitarian assistance. I don't recall your explanation for the Mozambique and the Malawi involvement, because if I don't see you reporting on it here, whether we did assist in terms of the humanitarian crisis there. But the essence is on some in terms of the reporting of the ARF and the tangible difference our donations make on the ground. Do we have a sense of that, or is just money that we throw in a hole for that matter? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rafuti.
Yeah. Thank you very much, DG, for your presentation. I just wanted to check with the 30 posts that whereby you said that there were no panel to... what kind of posts are those? The panel to come and... I think it's each one. And then... And the organogram, can we be finished later with the new structure of the department and the in endorsed? And with the Hague project, I think really as South Africans, it's a lesson. If Hague can also be that they you know, they didn't protect properly on the construction, and they are requesting 30% as MPs seated here, it's a lesson for us. Because I think we're not immune if contractors, when they come back and say that they need some increase in their project because they didn't protect property in building whatever. And with the public participation, we said that, you know, this is a domain that is too, you know, I don't know. You know, myself as Marafuti, who's in the township, I don't really understand international relations as supposed to be. So I think, you know, we must really increase more public participation. True public participation, I think, is not enough. Person, you know, the person who's leading us in this, you know, in this act. I think public participation is really, if we can really show our people really that, you know, we are taking Africa to the world. How do I do it? Be my person in the township. And then
payment of capital assets is unspent. Effectively, how are we going to rectify this? Effectively, in this global competitive world with technology. So why there is an understanding of 117,728. So that can it be, I really don't know how I'm going to say about it. Because we are talking about the computer somewhere in the meeting, there are all the banks. So what are we saying? What are we saying, you know? So if we have understanding in that regard. Thank you.
Honorable Mahila.
Thank you. Just three quick issues. One, Chair, we are hosting the AU summit in June. I just wanted to check our state of readiness, the country for that subject. And in the wake of the recent attacks on foreign nationals, I just want to check the ELCO as the ears and eyes of South Africa, how this issue has centered the image of South Africa as a country. And the last issue, there has been an outcry of some ambassadors who have misrepresented themselves in terms of their qualifications. I want to check what the department is doing in that regard to ensure that the situation is remedied. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that all? I want to go back on a more serious note now. From the issue earlier on about the phenomenon of albinism. Something I want to give a note. Why is South Africa being asked to develop a position paper on this? Because my sense is that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of 1948 of the UN and that of the then OAU and now AU, the China on Human and People's Rights, should ordinarily cover human rights as human rights. Women, they are saying women's rights are actually human rights. So they are not separate, but the first thing is that they are human beings. Now, I would try to be very strange that these two bodies, either the UN or the AU, would not have covered the rights of people with albinism. Why would a separate clause be created for countries like that? You see, because even before the albinism, I don't know what it would be, genetic condition. Before the last condition, you are dealing with them as human beings. Therefore, they must be entitled to all other or any other rights as other human beings, and them being human beings are entitled to. It does have an implication because it could mean that for as long as no position paper or a law has been created to cover people with this condition, it may mean that people can get away with murder because, look, there's no law that says it is punitive to harm them. You would not be convicted under a particular law. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. It's like the world of Africa is just behind this kind of thing.
The last one is on page 8. We provided substance support to South Africa's delegation to World Economic Forum, which focused on Africa's growth ambitions and global infrastructure investment.
Now, how does this focus by the World Economic Forum on infrastructure in Africa link up with both Agenda 2063 with regard to infrastructure and the North-South corridor, the one that is being championed by President Zuma, appointed by Africa, which will move from here to Cairo? Whether this one by the World Economic Forum will actually be separately financed, particularly separately financed in relation to the new development bank that will come in and finance all manner of infrastructure. Thank you. You will do those going to assist you from the department, but I'm sorry that we have tied up you with all of these questions.
So you're talking 34 questions, and you said I'm going to be very brief, and I hope you remember to not feel offended when I don't answer anything. Now, Chair, let me start with the question you just raised. See, the human rights environment is evolving. Chair, from time to time, you revisit the conventions, agreements, the protocol. For instance, the last year, there's a particular question of the LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual. There is a provision in the 1949 United Declaration of Human Rights that all people are born free and equal. But it is not a practice in society. So from time to time, as human, as a kind of realization, the human rights, we have to revisit and see how did the rights have been enjoyed? Have they been internalized in the constitution of the country? How does ordinary people feel? So the same thing with the question of albinism. It's true that in the Declaration of 1949, all these are pronounced, like our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the declaration of our commitment to this. But not many countries observe the United Declaration of Human Rights, or have internalized in their own Constitution. You see, that's now good. In the Constitution, especially in Africa, where some of these things are happening. If you scale through a number of issues in the continent, the LGBT issue is doesn't reflect number of constitution. In some countries, albinism is a curse. It's a curse. So the human rights defenders on this issue in the last recession, we'll talk on it again in June, beginning next week, until the end of July. But because of our forward-looking and more progressive constitution, especially the Bill of Rights, we've been asked to make a reflection. I suspect there is going to be a resolution. I'm not sure how this is going to end up. There is going to be a resolution where, again, we remind humanity about the rights of this minority among our people. It's something that we, who have human rights, have to always articulate. The feelings and position of those minority people, in this case, albinism. They are literally creatures hunted down in other countries, literally hunted down, where families hire them from the public. And you cannot accept the correctly say, this kind of behavior in the 21st century. So that's why we feel that in Africa, that we need to contribute towards a global change and perhaps some form of a convention or a protocol that protect these human beings from persecution and impunity in certain quarters. Now, on the issue of Davos and infrastructure. Now, yes, Davos, I had a chance of being there a few times in Davos. It's a forum where you have all these economic global players meeting in one spot. And their countries and regions reflect, brief the words of the orientation of their plans, original plans. What have they done in the Pure Davos from 1992 has been to reflect the African position. Because not every African country goes to Davos, but it's given a platform, like we have a platform in South Africa in Davos. So what I normally do, we spend a bit of time on African challenges and aspirations, especially on infrastructure, after the AU have said, maybe unlock infrastructure, maybe infrastructure can unlock the potential. Then part of that is South African issues, like in this Davos, you talk about energy, talk about transportation, talk about water and other things, in terms of infrastructure, social infrastructure and the physical infrastructure. That was part of South Africa. But also we said, for us to move Africa towards 2063, after we want, we need to ensure, like the corridor we talk about, share, North-South corridor, East-West corridor, and including the railroad, telecommunication, and energy infrastructure. So we market the entire continent, on top of the continent. And we are normally joined by Senegal and other countries. But then we spend a lot of time with several ministers in various meetings in Davos, targeting various investors and key people on certain programs. The thing is going to happen, you will see this morning here, on Africa Davos, we host. You will see if you go through the forum, there are areas where we talk as a continent. Now, we brought also the AU. But then going to be
especially for the separate business, wherever we market our own program, like in the area of energy, infrastructure, and this time around, radio edition, or around the 9 program of President Zuma, to say this is where we are going to be working on. There will be separate meetings on ocean economy and other economies. So we make sure, Chair, that at all costs, we don't forget the continent. Now, Chair, in terms of Honorable Kandam, your issues, I did check, my minister asked a question. Has the host agreement expired? Then we call our legal team, every day event, to go and study the agreement. State law advisors by the agreement. They came to us and say he does not expire. We heard from the parliament, including our own advocate, Madhav and Allah. We said no. According to the interpretation of our legal services, it has not expired. It is as it is. So maybe what we can then do, Chair, going forward, we can bring our legal advisors and help and look at the provision. That
you said it has not expired.
No, it has not lapsed. It is valid. Yeah, so maybe to answer Honorable Kalyan's question, we can bring both PAP and ERCO and say what advisors to get to look into that case. So this advisory was from our legal advisor. What they were saying was the annex, where, like Honorable Kalyan saying, we have not done that. So what do they want? What they want is they want ERCO to give them money. They're going to cure services like ICT, security, Let us say, if you want to Addis Ababa, the security is done by Ethiopians. Nobody else has the AU in Ethiopia. But here, they say, no, we must choose who we want to guard Mahama. And I can get you, most of them will not be South Africans. That's the truth. Then ICT, we said, no. We have seen that we have to go through supply chain because we have to account for this money as a department. It says, no, give us the money, we're going to procure our own ICT. So that is where the discussion is, Honorable Kajani, I don't remember. It's the annex to the agreement that we are discussing and other additional benefits that they have asked. So what we shall do, Chair, I think we should circulate to you to the members what PAP is asking us in black and white. So the other members, when they go to the parliament, they can say, but these are asking our country. So that we're on the same wavelength, so to say, in terms of... Marokanyan, there is the EU and inter-EU discussion. If the British so decide to exit from the EU, it's because there is a provision they can do so. There is nothing we can do in South Africa if they decide. We have another Cotonou agreement. So Cotonou agreement does not regulate the behavior of the EU members, of the EU members. Who accedes or doesn't accede. Does not, we just cooperate in terms of development, in terms of economy, but we don't cooperate in terms of telling who must be EU. Non-veto, who should be in the EU. The parliament must be EU. I don't want to ratify membership. So if Honorable Prime Minister of the UK won a referendum and they say his people just exit, ADP can only march and perhaps register a bit of concern. But what we can do, because we're just associate members in that area. Let me leave the recent issue to the relevant Land Pollution Department. We've been discussing this issue with them. Normally from our side, it's just to indicate the concern raised by our partners globally. But I know it has been the topic of the executive, of ministers in the parliament about the visas, not why the visas. There is also the question of the security and other issues. But we believe that some of these measures can be reviewed. Just in, I think, 2 days ago. So I think you've had the time to review its impact and unintended consequences of the measure. But I do agree on that, but let's leave that to the relevant land pollution department, which are more capable than perhaps bureaucracy. I can assure you that we have good relations with Nigeria. And I can assure you, Honorable Kalia, that I authorized that statement by DG Munyari. It was not a statement. The DG of Delco authorized it. She was sitting in Harare at the summit. When we heard that Nigeria has withdrawn its ambassador from South Africa because of attack on foreign nationals. Now, one of the last time I'm going to be slow, I think we need to reflect. It's a third decade of democracy, how we deal with the other countries of the West. When 87 South Africans perished in Nigeria, this country took a diplomatic route. We discussed Nigerians, we didn't attack anybody, we didn't withdraw ambassador or our consul general. 9 months later, the last bodies arrived in South Africa. We defend the protocol of engagement. But the thing Nigeria says is behind the bars. With the thought of so many people, not one, is arrested, let alone be committed. We remain other South Africans. How many other people draw the line in some of these issues? How far can we tolerate what is happening? How far can we be tolerant in the country what is happening? So that is the first thing that we have to respond to. Not a single Nigerian died during the last upheavals in South Africa. 7 people died, 3 South Africans, Ethiopian, DRC, and Mozambique. Not one Nigerian. But they overreacted. They have to understand if Mozambique or Ethiopia, when one person died. But it was they who overreacted. And it grew. But the political environment in South Africa, they are embarrassed in the country by outgoing government. Right? Also, you should mention, I'm going to say, but outgoing government of President Goodluck Jonathan, that withdrew them. So maybe the statement was harsh, but probably it was time to articulate our case. As I say, you know, remember, I authorized that statement from Harare. I put that paragraph which says, the first paragraph, the outgoing Nigerian government withdrew the acting commission. Because that's not the ambassador.
Yes.
They withdrew the ambassador already in December for the whole reason. This was a chargé. So we thought we should do so. And remember, in the last paragraph, I put the sentence, we will deal with the other issues of consent between the two countries with the incoming government. That's why we make sure that President Zuma goes to the inauguration in Nigeria, and once it's there, engage President Buhari on how to go forward as a new country. We could not keep on softy-softy when we think our partner has overreacted and in the process have caused some concern in our nation. That is the rationale why we did so. Why Mr. Madhava has done that, I don't know.
You must finish on a statement. No. Wait. No, DG, once you are done with a specific item, say so, then I will allow her to come in.
No, sure.
Then it means all of us then must come in if she wants to come
in. Sure, that's what normally do you go
to.
In all statements, nobody. On Island, their question is a statement on behalf of government. Whether it's bereavement, passing our heads of state, disaster, we issue a statement. Well, it was very unfortunate, Honorable Kalia. The Honorable Minister took a different route on this one. They've not done that before. In all the statements they have issued, and I can tell you, we issue statements every day. Only for the President. But we have not heard. It was the first time we hear in the same voice when we are not consulted on this. On what we say. All the time when we came here, we issued a statement on behalf of the president, ministers, the country, whether disaster, whether election, we issued it. It was the first time. That's why now, Kalia, and I think what we said was that we need to discuss, we need to coordinate our efforts. It was an unfortunate event, but that's not this event. It does not, indicate a trend that government is putting this array. Yeah, so far, there's not been another statement ever seen whether it's a
okay. I hope you are done. Honorable Kalyan, do you want to come in? Or because you just had the email that Honorable Kalyan.
Yes, the
PG
is unfortunate, but it doesn't reject marriage on...
Can you
put
on?
Well, I think PG has responded and said that it was unfortunate that there was dissent. But quite frankly, it reflected poorly on our country when a senior minister has to then say, no, 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 this is not the official position of our country. And it's been publicized, and the last edition of the Financial Mail puts South Africa's gerbil in a very, very poor state. It not only says here it's time for South Africa to support Nigeria, but it also dwells on the nine qualifications of our ambassador to Japan. So he's got to now... I'm just saying that publications like this, which are international publications, and it reflects poorly on gerbil. And as the DG says, you know, he signed off on this, but then you find that the senior president, senior minister and acting president that come distance themselves. We must be speaking with one voice on a particular topic.
Sure. Thank
you, Jonathan. I think that the response of the DG is quite calming. Because what if they are going to speak within the government itself, it shows that the thing can be quelled, that in the future it will not happen. But really, on the issue of that statement, I think that the South Africa must also assert itself, because we cannot be bullied around in the continent. I think that if something is wrong has happened, it has happened. It must be condemned. Because really, if they didn't invest in advocating to come and tell the department that before we go to those people, it was wrong. The department responded appropriately. Because all of Africa, we were very contentious to Nigeria. Our people stayed there for more than 9 months. We were never corrected. So I think that if an outgoing government could do what they have done, I think that if we are setting up the incoming government, that the relationship must be soured between the two countries. But I think that statement was correct at the time. I think that even the minister, the president, it was, but it's not his mandate to deal with internationalization issues. It's his department. Thank you, Chair.
Sure. Honorable Dudley, and welcome.
Thank you. Very nice. I have a question, but I also first of all, you just comment, say, my observation is that obviously just as very cautious.
It's just to say, obviously we have quite a strong commitment to dealing with things diplomatically, but I personally as a South African was very pleased with Gerko's response in terms of that issue, especially in terms of what had happened and how we were following very hard on the deaths that have taken place in Nigeria. So for me it seems really, really important that we actually put that clarity out there. But my question would be, when it comes to an article like that in a publication that is credible and is out there in public view and it has a global sort of status, do we get a chance to respond? Do we have a right of response? Does Gurkha actually take any of that sort of seriously, and is it a good place for us perhaps to insist on a right of response and perhaps put the South African view forward there? Just the question.
Thank you. Just one or two things on my side. I had a privilege, maybe I should not mention name, but I had a privilege of asking a certain of working for Ojako. Why things came out that way from the department and the attitude of Nigeria. And he said, you know, there are two countries in the continent whose attitude towards South Africa is at the very best. Nigeria and Zimbabwe. And then He said specifically, the current president of Nigeria is that, then he told me about some story about what happened in New York between that president and the United Nations, between that president and our president, how that president could last over, not our president. On a matter that was very important for the world to understand about Africa. And it was bad. Other presidents, this ex-president, quiet. Now, I'm not disclosing the name of that president. Now, the other one I'm disclosing. I attended the Center for Conflict Resolution. And then I engaged Ambassador Kakamba. He's in Zambia. He's working in the office of the AU chairperson in Guatemala. He said more or less the same thing about a possibility of mobilizing, a possibility of, not possibility, but that certain people or certain countries, while they appreciate the resources that South Africa puts in, whether you're talking about transfer payments, you're talking about hosting certain events when they can't hold the same South Africa, take it. The money we're putting in into peacekeeping, the money we're putting in into negotiations and all of those things. Then, he then did say the same thing more or less. Nigeria in particular, but he also referred to the outgoing government, and then referred to the body, but he referred to a person, which is a president. That their attitude towards South Africa is just not good. They have a habit of wanting to mobilize the opinion of Africa against South Africa. And certain quarters in the world, particularly countries, is aware of that gap. And sometimes when they want to undermine the AU, they actually go to the French-speaking or the former French colony to divide Africa. So things like this. Now, imagine it, because you see, we're a sovereign country. We put in a lot of money to Africa. There are times when we must also say no. But I agree that it was unfortunate. Certainly, you're quite right. I think it should have been the position that the minister has on what was said by the department should have been referred to the minister, so that the minister of ELCO or someone else could accept it. But to have two departments, one government, it's something like that. Was not for us. Yeah, the DG is required to...
Yeah. Chairperson, just for the way forward, I mean,
yes.
We still have a presentation on Sudan.
Yeah.
Do you think we want the DG to answer all 34 questions today or can he come back? Because there is things that we need to really have a discussion and a debate about.
No, you can ask him to respond to the given writing. But there are other parts you can say that just keep my folks. Do we want to bring that out?
No, sorry, Chairperson. I see that all the questions asked by one of the other is being answered. So she cannot pick up any questions. I think that's why we're in the meeting. Some questions must be answered.
We can wait for
You didn't note anything? Yeah. I think the DG. You know, you're playing with power, man. Next time, you must feel power. Yeah, we request you to copy it too. But there's a view that you will not answer all of them. Yeah. If anything is left out, we'll take it to you, we'll ask it. But otherwise, I'm going to answer it.
Yeah. No, I'm glad about you discussed this issue. Just to say that there's not a then question to say my brother, I'm very sorry, what my entire my counterpart was fired on the spot. And you call the minister to account. What is that in Nigeria? And he sent this Boko Haram then it is my lot also thank for the cooperation in dealing with Boko Haram. I don't know if it's still yet, but I remember what assistance we are giving Nigeria to fight Boko Haram. I think relevant you as an MP, maybe they will take you somewhere and inform you. I'm not authorized to do that because you are with other people. So I think at the relevant time, we will be told that. Now, on the issue, I'm just taking issues that they must have discussed. I was quite keen recently. Now, remember, I think according to the report, as we discussed in 7, 8, 9, with the General, with committee and everybody, I think this year all these results will be different than last year. So I think rest assured that we have turned the corner. Now, on the issues of destruction, Honorable Kenya, no, before that the refugees, it's a very sad situation. It's a very sad situation that's happening in Syria. Again, against our advice to the people power that let's learn from Iraq to solve the issue of Syria differently. Because you can bomb Syria to Stone Age, and we not find peace. So we send the Eastern delegation of Deputy Foreign Minister to plead with the Syrian authority and US, EU to say, let's find a solution. But as usual, nobody heed our advice like in Libya. Nobody heed our advice. So you then have a situation where the people unintentionally, ISIS was born and almost take over. And observe no international law for rule or protocol. And our friends are at a loss what to do. So they don't control ISIS. The idea was to have the Syrian opposition. But in the process, unintentionally, they assist ISIS. So the refugees at Amok is a very sad. The slaughter going on there is a hallmark of ISIS and its outshoots globally. Whether you are in Iraq, in Syria, and you see now in Africa, its affiliates, you see very, very worrying trends in terms of human rights violations, impunity, and cruelty we've not seen since the First World War, I think. So, what do we do as international community? We are worried about in Africa. So you will see in the AU summit, there will be three sessions where we have discussed the treaty in Africa. Because we are worried about what is going to happen. What is happening around Nigeria, the Great Lakes, Sudan, and North Africa. The picture is not of the best. We are getting worried. That is why from our side, for making all efforts to make sure that our regional brigade is ready. And by extension, to make sure that quick the rapid defense force is ready to because we know once they get to Nigeria, that is anywhere. And who says we don't have special grounds in South Africa for it to happen? Who says we don't have special grounds in South Africa for it to happen? We are very equally worried. And part of Operation Sierra has taught us many lessons. The amount of arms in the hands of illegal people in South Africa. The amount of money, communication devices in their hands. Now it needs only one small organization to do what is written in Kenya in South Africa. So part of Operation Sierra should be understood not as a response to what has happened, but I think it's long overdue. But the concern, Chair, is destabilizing Africa. Africa is our market. That is where I said in the last report, where we made a huge return on investment. If this market is destabilized, it's going to impact on our economy. On our economy. So that's why there is a business interest on the peace and stability in the continent. Because we are part of the continent. Honorable, there are two topics being added in the AU agenda. In migration. The first section of the AU is called migration. And you suspect part of it might be because of what has happened here, but part is because of thousands of Africans perishing in the sea between Europe and the laws in Europe. The second topic, for the first time ever, is called xenophobia. In the first whole section, now I'm answering what I remember. The first whole section on the 14th from 9 to 11 city, whole section 1 plus 4, no mere nothing, including migration, xenophobia, and Boko Haram and other South Sudan and others. So again in this one, expect President Zuma to do what he did in SADC, summit 29th of April, to brief his colleagues, counterparts, about what happened in South Africa and the measures we are putting to take. And by the way, so far, there's a lot of support from the continent on the measures. I'm sure you will have a chance to ask to thank other members. They just believe their members and go to constituencies, mobilize Africans to say, this is wrong. Do not attack. Because no country in the world, no one has done what they are against us. What did you do in the refugee situation? In fact, in Europe, had a winning lesson on anti-immigration, on anti-foreign, not in this country. So the world, starting from the Ban Ki-moon and others, are really appreciative of the effort that we want to have to put into place. But the issue is going to come in under the issue of xenophobia. That reflects on the issues raised by honorable members. And then on the issues of...
Just point of information. Point of information. I don't know if the DC is aware, but 2 nights ago, at the DCT camp in Chatsworth, a body was discovered. I don't know if you know about it, but you know, they're trying to investigate whether, you know, it was murder or what, but just as a point of information.
And that's the they got for the very last time. Did you?
Okay. Thanks for the information, Honorable Kalyan. I will reflect. On the issues raised by Honorable Kenya, there were two unanswered questions. I'm very sure about leaving out the HRM on page 8, because indeed there was a lot of discussion. More so that President Zuma was asked to chair, on behalf of President Trump, the HRM summit. In Addis Ababa. So I'm very sorry about that oversight. The understanding financial statement, I attempt to explain on our record here that part of understanding was because this might be a program in the long run, in Barazalam, and the problem in the age. Now, remember, you raised the issue of the age. It's a consistent work on the technology. We are very shocked after appointing a service provider. Just on implementation, this provider says, and it's a Dutch company. Oh no, a very sort of miscalculator. It almost doubled the cost of the machine. Now, this is always the bill bought almost 70 years ago. So we said, no, it does not. Services must go back and choose another service provider. No. Now you know the European laws. European laws are making laws. So we did discuss it with them. We did investigate our Kenya. The CFO went there twice. I'm sitting in fact there. He said we had found a compromise, but it has delayed the project. In fact, it has delayed the project. I can tie up to the issue raised about Ghana. We have opened a police case about Ghana. They have investigation. So this is going to start the investigation. At the same time, the same hearing is going on. The police concern has since written a letter that she's resigning. I said, whoa,
That's the easy way out.
Oh, no. Luckily, we have a police case. And we might also file a citizen claim. So that you cannot stop somebody resigning.
Yeah, for sure. But
what is this? What is the picture? Which is the picture? This is a man's work. That is by the teacher of this. So, but at least we have legal process going on, like police investigations are going on, and everything is changed. But we need to cover 8 million lines. That's what we have to do. Now, on the issue of the GDP, you mentioned the spokesperson. Processes are going on because duty bound when something happens to look into the validity and the source of whatever it is. So far, the source is only one, is ENCA. There's no other source. So there is somebody looking into that matter. As expected by the you and members and the Caribbean public to look into that matter. So it's going on. Mr. did say during a vote speech that you are not going to anything under the carpet, so that is going on. We will send again the breakdown on Ebola. This is managed, we gave money from ERF to the health department, community department, to do the issue of Ebola. You know, buying of ambulances, doctors, field hospitals. But I think there will be, we'll send the, what you call, we'll send the breakdown as it is by my own. We have asked, you know, the Treasury said everybody should contribute towards the infrastructure development fund. So they cut their call, like we showed the last time, by 335 million. Almost everybody has about the same thing. So I think now the issue raised by Ral Mukhalafa of FDI. Cameroon, she has paid all the funds. We sent a very stern warning to untold they didn't settle. Now what did Romani do? And this started during the period of President Beg. We have had a targeted visit. We now encourage Deputy President and the Minister, whenever they go, they must take with them private sector. We have come to a conclusion, all members, that this huge conference of 20-50 business people, it's okay, but what is more important? It is this one-on-one. It is this one-on-one dialogue.
I think, I'm sorry for interrupting. Is it possible that I request that the rest of the responses, unless you pick one, that the rest of the responses be written down, or Mr. Mansive and the non-DPT, Balu could verify with our committee secretary, so that with this 10-minute presentation on Sudan, 10 minutes for Dr. Masu Golden, and then for the statue, we've got to be done by at least between 10 past and 1 past 12. We're considering the other meeting, unfortunately.
Okay, sure. Just think of it as our member. It's the day I chaired the interdepartmental meeting, protocol, the security of our department. We are 120% right. Although they added two more items, the program of women conference and youth conference, that we think can be that, including the visit to head of state to Kalenda. So far,
the next item is supposed to be presented by your concern, but to allow you to take a briefing state, I present and then followed by, over to you, is it going to be filmed here?
Chairperson and members of the committee. Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here before you and present on South Sudan. We thought we should start by showing a map of South Sudan to firstly emphasize on the geopolitical location of South Sudan and the countries that are bordering South Sudan and the reason why it's so critical for South Africa to be involved in ensuring that South Sudan returns to normalcy and that the crisis comes to an end and the war comes to an end. I will not go in depth on the countries. I think they are very self-explanatory on the map. But just you can see, we have South Sudan bordered by Sudan on the north, Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, Central African Republic, which themselves lend themselves to conflictual situations if South Sudan is not addressed. By way of introduction, and I apologize for this, last that slide. The outbreak of this conflict really started in December 2013 due to an alleged attempt by former Vice President Riek Machar to remove President Salva Kiir from office. So in terms of diagnostic analysis of the genesis of this conflict, we realized that it really was prompted by the internal division within the SPLM as a party. This conflict, of course, prompted our president to appoint Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa as special envoy to South Sudan. Our intervention really in South Sudan is therefore premised on the notion that the solution to the ongoing conflict lies primarily in the reconciliation of the SPLM. And as you know, this SPLM has got a number of factions, the faction in government, the faction of SPLM former detainees, and the faction of SPLM in opposition. So there are two tracks to the mediation efforts. The first track being the IGAD track, which is the IGAD being the regional body with the head of state involvement in there, as well as special envoy. The second track being the intra-party, and this is where South Africa and Tanzania come in. The conflict has not been very easy to the people of South Sudan, as it has resulted in millions of them being killed, and again, millions of refugees fleeing to the neighboring countries. So as I said, the IGAD, which is the regional body, has insisted with this problem since January 2014. And this resulted in the IGAD facilitating various agreements on the cessation of hostilities and ceasefire. January, May, and June, these agreements are signed, but all of them, without exception, have been violated. They have not really come to much.
EGAD again in August 2014 outlined the attempt towards the formation of the government of the community with the aim of accommodating the impact of the crisis to the conflict and short cessation of hostilities for periods leading up to elections. So going back again on the EGAD and what the EGAD has been able to do to ensure that we have lasting peace to the problem in Sudan. And in an attempt to put pressure on the three SPLM factions, which I have mentioned, the EGAD bloc issued a number of deadlines for the warring factions to reach agreement to the peace. The opposing groups were unable to meet these deadlines, and to date, of course, as you might be aware, no agreement has been reached. You might also be aware that EGAD has suspended its talks, but has however indicated that it would continue to engage the warring factions, the different factions of the FTLM, to reach conclusion, particularly on the issue of the transitional government. As you may be aware, the current mandate of the government would come to an end by, and I think around middle of this year, June. And it's very critical that transitional arrangements are put in place. So because this peace in terms of facilitation, the EGAD has been a bit elusive, the AU call is set to increase the number of representation around EGAD to assist the EGAD with its facilitation. And in this regard, they added a number of countries from the continent to support the EGAD, and this committee is called EGAD Plus, and it's got South Africa, Nigeria, Algeria, Chad, and Rwanda. It also includes the Troika, USA, UK, and Norway. China and the UN, the EU, and the AU are also part of the EGAD Plus. And EGAD has also requested Sudan's president for realizing that he is the neighbor and could probably hold the key to the resolution that Sudan has been left out for far too long, and they found it necessary to have Sudan al-Bashir, President al-Bashir, included in the facilitation. So really concurrent to these peace efforts by EGAD committee members, we launched inter-party dialogue, which was actually formulated to tackle the core issues that led to the party split. We have played a very important role as South Africa in facilitation of these talks, with Tanzania as a co-guarantor to the peace talks. Now, just really taking up on the inter-party itself, and in support of the EGAD mediation process, the President, because of our historic bonds with the Republic of South Sudan, the President was requested by all the factions without exception. And I said due to our historic bonds, but also the neutrality that they perceive South Africa to have, that the President decided that Deputy President should play the role of special envoy to the conference. This process, ladies and gentlemen, has been complementary and should not be seen as in any way in competition with the mediation process led by the regional body. It was also furthermore motivated by what was identified as the genesis of the problem, the leadership crisis and poor governance that was evident in the FPLM. Additionally, the dialogue would assist the party in transforming it into an institutionalized political party. And if you can read the preamble of the Arusha Agreement that was signed in January 2012, you'll notice that in the preamble recognizes the loss of ideological direction and lack of clarity of vision by the FPLM leaders, which has contributed to the emergence of the current crisis. Hence, it is very critical that this angle of intra-party be emphasized. The special envoy has had a mandate that is very, very clear. And in that mandate, he has engaged warring factions, he has engaged regional leaders, and other relevant parties with a view to finding lasting solutions to this intra-party factions. I have explained who the intra-party factions are, and I won't get into that. But a special envoy has been supported in South Sudan by a team of experts who have now concluded first phase of consultation and are embarking on the second and third phase of consultations with the warring parties. Very critical that these experts continue to support the team of the special envoy in South Sudan. The special envoy has visited the region since his mandate started 5 times, and he kick-started the discussions with fact-finding missions in that region from 5 to 12 March of 2014. He conducted visits not only to Juba, but also to Uganda, to Kenya, to Ethiopia, and he also brought in to South Africa the members of the former detainees to engage them on their possible return. It is within that context that the meeting is taking place now in Juba, and there has also been meetings in Tanzania and Kenya, precisely to ensure that the regional leaders are kept in the loop. In fact, this week, the Deputy President or Special Envoy took with him along to Juba the 5 members of the former detainees, just to have them engage in preliminary discussions with the stakeholders in the country. And we understand from our people that are with the Deputy President in Juba at the moment that were received with great jubilation by the people of Juba, because they see light with the arrival of the 5 former detainees. They can see that peace is very close to South Sudan. In terms of the mechanisms that have been put in place to support the special envoy, there's a team there of ambassadors and other experts that are providing the special envoy with constant information and are meeting different stakeholders and ensuring that agreements that have been reached with the intervention of the special envoy are adhered. We also held a PCRD strategy workshop, which was attended by, among others, Ambassador Ntapu, who provided expert opinion on the genesis of the conflict and how, as a department, we should look at the conflict and how it should be addressed through the intervention of the various stakeholders to the conflict. We've also deployed $15 million in humanitarian assistance, and in that regard, we're still trying to find a way of getting the humanitarian assistance to Sudan. There are many issues that have prevented it from getting there on time, one of which is the fact that the war has been going on, and we wouldn't want the medical supplies, because the humanitarian assistance is more in medical supplies. But the medical supplies get deployed to Juba and do not find distribution to the rest of the country, which at this stage is very difficult to navigate due to the war. But we're trying to find means and are talking to entities like Médecins Sans Frontières, to the WFP, to see how best we can deploy this humanitarian assistance. We have also trained 1,600 South Sudanese in capacity building, because we believe they were trained by various partners, because we believe once the war is over, the country needs to go on. The warring factions in the conflict are listed there. And as I said, it's SPLM in government, SPLM in opposition, and the SPLM former detainees. We must indicate outright, committee members, that most of the issues, because of the facilitation of IGAD and the special envoy, Deputy President Ramaphosa, and of course the support of the intra-party through Tanzania, has yielded a lot of agreement on some issues. The most contentious and remaining issues are around the creation of a post of prime minister in the new democratic government. The contention within the talks centers around the role of the prime minister and, of course, the amount of power that this prime minister must be bestowed with. The other contentious issue is that of power sharing ratio in the government post the transition. And of course, we're very concerned as a country about the lack of agreement on the side of the Sudanese government and of course the faction of Dr. Riek Machar, which has continued to generate instability in the country. And you might be aware that in the last few weeks there was a recapture of the capture of the town of Malakal, and again it was recaptured by government from Riek Machar. So they would capture one, then the government recaptured, and then they got another one captured and recaptured. However, there's great hope following the engagement with the special envoy that Riek Machar will be brought also into the discussions, and we might actually begin to see the end of conflict to South Sudan soon. The UN Security Council, as you might be aware, has adopted unanimously Resolution 2206 of 2015, which outlines proposed punitive measures, which will include travel bans, freezing of assets of individuals, as well as an embargo. The sanctions are expected to target those individuals allegedly responsible for or engaged directly or indirectly in actions threatening the peace and stability of South Sudan. The statement for sanctions was reiterated by the UN in March of 2015. As a country, though, we look into these proposed sanctions.
1 minute, please. 1 minute.
We look into the proposed sanctions and would like to examine the efficacy of targeted sanctions or sanctions to a country that is so fragile and requires a lot of assistance that in its isolation we might not be able to find lasting peace. Now, in terms of our position as a country, we would like to encourage the former detainees, because this process already started, to do everything possible to return to South Sudan in an effort to kickstart the implementation of the reunification agreement. We'd like to reaffirm South Africa's commitment to the intra-party dialogue and the need for the factions to commit to the agreement. To underscore South Africa's continuing support for the IGAD-led mediation process as well as the intra-party process, we also underscore the need for an ongoing war in South Sudan to stop and to emphasize the need to find a political solution under the agreed protocol on transitional government. And in conclusion, Chairperson, and really just give you a snapshot of the development in the last week facilitated by the Deputy President, we feel that the inter-party process led by the special envoy and Tanzania has reached a critical stage and will need support with a proposed permanent return by end of June of the political detainees. They are anticipated to be back in Juba by end of June. The special envoy's current visit has therefore opened a new chapter and momentum towards resolving the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. The meeting of the five detainees, as I said earlier in my discussion, with the National Liberation Council on 2 June, the Politburo and government, facilitated the step by step ceremony, has added a new dawn.
Okay, Sister Ida. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. Thank you very much. I request that you give us the copies, particularly on the way forward on South Africa position. Copies. Would you be present? Okay. Yeah. I'm going to introduce Dr. Vasu Gowden to make a presentation more or less on the same subject. Just two things about him. I am told that he is the executive director of the African Center for the Constructive Resolution of Disputes, commonly known as ACORD, which he founded in 1992. He is a lawyer by profession, he is a mediator, and he is also an experienced conflict management practitioner and trainer. Gowden has been involved in preparing conflicting parties across Africa for negotiations, including rebel groups in Burundi and the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC. He also has provided mediation support to the facilitators of the Burundi peace process. which included former President Nelson Mandela, President Jacob Zuma, and Minister Charles Nyabula then, and has served as an advisor on mediation strategy to former President Kitumile Masire, and that's the president of Botswana, on the inter-Congolese dialogue peace process. Mr. Golden was also appointed as the mediation advisor to the Deputy Minister of International Relations of South Africa, who facilitated the recent Madagascar mediation. With that, it's a very short resume of the man who's going to speak to us. And thank you very much on behalf of the committee. You're most welcome. And thanks for agreeing to come and share your wisdom and your understanding of issues around South Sudan. I am told that you have a very incisive intellect. It is really a privilege to have you here. Over to you.
Chair, let me thank you very much, and thank you to the committee members. And I'm accompanied by Ambassador Relina Tlapo. I don't think needs much introduction to the members of the committee. He was with the DILCO for many years and served in many capacities in government. He's now senior political advisor to a court working with us on conflicts on the continent. Chair, what we intended to do, the presentation by the Chief Director on South Sudan accords very well with our own understanding of development in South Sudan. So I don't think we're going to add much to what she has presented, maybe to amplify some of the issues. But what we intended to do today, and I'm going to make a suggestion because I know that your time is very limited. I know that you have you don't have a lot of time available today. I think you probably have another 15 minutes. What we intended to do, this is, South Sudan is symptomatic of a number of problems we are going to be facing on the continent. You would have seen an upsurge of conflict in the last couple of years. South Sudan, DRC, well, Central African Republic, Mali, Burkina Faso, Burundi again now. So there's a number of these conflicts that are taking place. What we intended to do today, and we were told to present for an hour and then have an hour's discussion. So we had prepared to share with you our understanding over the last 23 years or so working with all of these conflict situations about what are the key fault lines on the continent currently that are going to drive not just the South Sudanese conflict, but a number of conflicts on the continent. So this is only the beginning. We will see many other countries fall into the same problem in the next couple of years, and South Africa will have to respond. South Africa ourselves will have our own problems internally as well. So what we intended to do was to give you that particular analysis. To give you that particular analysis so that it will help the committee whenever there is any conflict that arises on the continent, you would be able to immediately relate it to what are those underlying causes that are driving the conflict on the continent. Now, I'm not sure I could do justice for all of that in 15 minutes. What I'm going to suggest then is we'd be very happy to come and do a special presentation to the committee. I think it will be very important for your committee because you are charged with the particular mandate of dealing with our international relations. And key to our international relations, as the DG correctly pointed out, if we don't solve this problem on the continent, and we rely so much and we are linked so much to the continent for our own economic development and to safeguard our own democracy in the country, that we need to make sure that we are prepared to deal with these conflicts. And the development of the continent will depend...
Just hold on, is it possible to present you that we don't take a discussion, we just take a presentation, that we allow him to present until, with your permission, until the quarter past. We have 15 minutes to move to the other side. And the quarter past, we just take, because it's complementing this one, then we don't engage, we look at the presentation, and then some other time perhaps we can come back to that. Then that will allow you to speak longer. Over to you.
That's
Multicultural organization, so we have and multinational. We have staff from all over the continent. Our peace building unit is headed by a Burundian woman. Our peace building unit is headed by a Kenyan, and our peacekeeping is headed by a Brigadier General from Zimbabwe. So the organization represents generally the continent. But let me just go. This is where we are headquartered in Durban. And these are offices in Juba and in Burundi. Burundi is covering the Great Lakes region. And these are all of the countries we have been operating in on the continent. We are working with, this is a peaceful meeting we just had in Addis Ababa 2 weeks ago with a UN special group, a reference group on peace building. This is a meeting on mediation with the AU that we hosted also about 3 weeks ago in Addis. This is one of our trustees. Our trustees are the principals of the 5 economically black universities in South Africa. That's where how we were founded initially. This is a training in South Sudan. Here's DDG coming to visit us. This is a initiative we launched for Dr. Salim Ahmed Salim to celebrate his time at the AU. And this is a mediation that we were asked to do by the AU to kickstart the border negotiations between Sudan and South Sudan that had stalled for 2 years. And we spent 5 days with the two ministers and their delegations, and we were able to broker an agreement that kickstarted the negotiations. Okay. This is an annual mediation seminar that we do with the African Union. We've been running it now for 5 years with the African Union. It brings all the special envoys of the AU together. The next one will be held in Namibia. And your heads of mission who, before they left on their mission, the ambassadors, they came down to a quarter headquarters for the, okay, so just to quickly look at the potential of the continent, part of our problem, 60% of the world's uncultivated arable land, 23% is forest, 75% of global platinum deposits, 50% diamonds and precious stones, 50% chromium, 20% gold and uranium deposits. This is part of our problem, of course. By 2030, about 40 African countries will be oil and gas producers. Proven oil reserves, 120 billion barrels, worth $10.3 trillion. Gas reserves, 510 trillion cubic feet, worth $3 trillion. Proven shale gas, 1,042 trillion, $6 trillion. And then our fish trade about $22 billion, but we lose a lot in illegal fishing. And then consumer spend on the continent is $680 billion. By 2030, it will be $2.2 trillion. Huge market. And if you look at the demographic figures, you'll see why also we would have. What we, the presentation looks at two things. One is the underlying causes, and the second thing, I wouldn't cover a lot of that now because of your time constraint, is what we call convergence and complexity. There are a number of factors that are converging together now.
bringing huge complexity on the continent, and we don't think that we're equipped to deal with that problem, not just on the continent, but globally. We're not equipped to deal with this complexity that is coming. So these are the problems that we think we'll be facing in the future. Now, if you look at evolution of societies, society moves from agricultural to industrial to information age. What drives these two things is technology and demographics. As you get to move from rudimentary equipment, so the Stone Age there was no equipment. The discovery of iron ore brought about rudimentary equipment that allowed you to plow and all of that. So you move from Stone Age to agricultural. Advent of the steam engine moved you into industrial. Microchip moved you into the information age. Nanotechnology moved you to biotechnology age, which is where we are now. And the jump at the beginning of the computer, quantum computer age, which will take us into space travel. In the next 2 to 3 decades, there will be phenomenal developments in space travel that will allow us to find new planets. It's already there. The science is there. We just don't have a way of financing it yet, but the science is already there. We will be absolutely. Now, here's the problem. The problem is this. Most of the world has moved there. Africa is still sitting here. So large parts of the continent, except for South Africa, there isn't any of the other countries that have industrialized to any significant extent or moved into the information society. Part of that problem is what is leading to a lot of the conflict that we are experiencing, and I'll explain why in a minute. Okay, if we just look at then the demographics of the continent, world population, 1950 was 2.5 billion, Africa was 230 million, accounted for 9%. 2050, we are now 7.3 billion in the world, Africa is 1.2 billion, 16%. 2050 will be 9.5 billion, 25% of it will be in Africa. And by 2100, 11 billion on the continent, on the planet, and 4.2 billion, 39% of world population will be in Africa. Okay? By 2050, 50% of those will be under the age of 18. It can be a huge, huge opportunity for the continent because it's a huge labor force, or it can be a very huge problem for the continent because it will be transported for rebel groups and others who want to use them for whatever purpose. Okay? I'll skip that because of that. Now, what is happening is we are finding in the north the rise of private enterprise, rise of civil society, and the decline of the nation state, driven by two things. Globalization of the market economy means that money can move around the world. And I'll give you a very simple example. You take a company like Nokia. A company like Nokia makes more money than its host country, the country of Finland. Because Finland gets its revenue from its tax bill, which is a few million. Nokia gets its revenue from millions around the world. So for the first time in history, this has turned things on its head. A private company generates more income than its host nation. And increasingly, more and more private companies are beginning to get income revenue that far exceeds that of nation states. So what you're seeing is the rise of private enterprise and the decline of nation states. Nation states are being reduced to their core functions of what they were doing. They're not now as permissive as they used to be. And then civil society, through globalization of information, with a cell phone in your hand, you can mobilize millions of people today. It has given unprecedented power to civil society. These are things that nations are not coming to grips with yet. These are things that nations still feel that they are so strong, but they forget that these are things that are happening in the world. Now, this is not the case in Africa. In Africa, largely because of this issue of us remaining in the agricultural age, here the state is still very powerful. And here the state doesn't act as a state. Largely, it acts as a kingdom. That's why presidents in a lot of these countries can also pardon you as what they call in law a pater familias. This is part of our problem right now. Burundi is a typical example of what we're experiencing here. So okay, let me just go quickly here. In order to get stability in society, you need a balance between the two. Private enterprise, nation states, and civil society. So a distribution of power and influence that has some equity amongst the people. So the state, of course, has to have separation of powers, and then military and security agencies are professional and other civilian accountability, and political parties should be based on values, not on identity. okay, not Hutu, Tutsi, whatever, but on certain values. And their private sector should be sustainable, independent and diverse, have good infrastructure and a good regulatory environment, and civil society should be independent and strong, well-resourced and represent diverse interests. Now, you have all of this, which we have in South Africa, all of this. You need two other things for stability. You need resources, which again we have in the country, although, you know, it's depleting, but we have it, and then skills. This is the biggest threat to our democracy, is the skill factor. But everything else we have in place, if we don't get this right, you'll see later why we will have huge problems in this country also. We will not be immune to the problems they're having in the rest of the continent. Okay, now if you get a fair distribution, these are labor statistics, employment statistics, if you get a fair distribution between civil society, public sector and private sector, like most of the developed world has gone through industrialization, etc., and these are now Europe, for example, 40% on average in the public sector, 30% here and 10% in civil society. What you then get is a declining population, which is more manageable, large urban population that is required for industrialization or the information society, high life expectancy, low infant mortality. So all the indicators are pretty good indicators. Now, the problem that we have on the continent is this. You have a concentration of power and influence at the center. And so even civil society, even the private sector and the state, we are concentrated in the center. The problem with that concentration is it marginalizes large sectors of people. This is why you have a South Sudan. Because Sudan marginalize them and they set up a separate state. And that's what marginalization leads to, if people think about separation. So what happens when you have this kind of situation? We have a rapidly increasing population. We're still very much agricultural, but rapidly urbanizing. By 2030, we will be 50% urbanized. The problem with that rapid urbanization is that it's not met with the creation of a new economy, industrialization. So what you have is huge unemployment. Life expectancy is still very low, and then HIV, AI, malaria is still not a big problem. And then sanitation, etc., is a big problem. Now, let's go to examples that we have. In South Africa, we have 59% in the private sector, 18% in the public sector, 73% in the civil society sector. It looks pretty good. But the real issue is this. Only 30% of us live in the center. 70% of our people are still out of the military. Okay? Now, here's the problem. When we have elections at a national level, they're conflictual, but they're not as violent as you would have them on the periphery. Why? Because the people at the center have three things. They have skills, they have capital, and they have opportunity. So if you lose elections at the center, you can move from one to the other. You can go from government to the private sector or civil society. But if you lose elections here, you lose everything. And that's why these elections are so violent and so conflictual. Not only at a national level, but even at a party level. Okay? For now, probably the ANC has a large problem here. The DA will not be immune to that problem. EFF is definitely not immune to that problem. So these things of conflictual situations in political parties are going to plague all political parties. The only way we'll deal with that problem is to close the gap. How do you close the gap? Two things. Infrastructure and education. Okay, those are the two things. Why? Because infrastructure will allow you to expand your economy into industrial economy, into information economy, etc. Without education, people will not be able to take advantage of those opportunities. So I know, Jay, you were a principal at one point in your life, so you'll appreciate why education is so important. Now, take Kenya. Kenya has the same similar distribution. The problem is only 20% of Kenyans are in the center. That's why we are having all of these ethnic tensions in Kenya also. And if you take Burundi has 61% in the public sector, 35% in the private sector, 4% in civil society. Okay? Now, this 35% in the private sector, unlike South Africa, for example, where private sector operates despite government. If government drops the private sector, funds. In Burundi, you exist in the private sector because of the public sector. You have to have a contract with government in order to exist. So in Burundi, only 5% sit at the center. That's why when they have elections, the problem is not just in the periphery, the problem is at the center. You lose at the center, you lose everything. That's why we have that current problem in Burundi right now.
Because those who feel that they might be excluded and the president might win an overwhelming majority know that they will be completely out, economically, politically, everything. And they're going to fight to the nail to stay in that political process. So this is what is playing out in Burundi right now. So this is our dilemma on the continent. We need to move in that direction. Sweden has the kind of equity that you need, the kind of stability that you need. In between there are any other models, Brazil, Turkey, etc. And then yes, us here, and then yes, Burundi on this side. We need to move in that direction. We need to close the gap through education and infrastructure in order to build that. But this takes generations to do. We realize that in 20 years we're not able to achieve that. It's going to take us another generation. It's going to take Burundi another two generations. It's going to take South Sudan, if they continue the war we've been telling them that, it's going to take them three generations to solve their problems in South Sudan. So, but the problem is, it's a vicious cycle, because so long as you continue to have this, you'll always have conflict. So what we are experiencing, and a lot of countries on the continent now, is this, but it's coming to a force now. Why we have not seen it in 20 years ago, the same situation, is because suddenly we are getting what is called convergence. Mm-hmm. And convergence means suddenly populations have increased. Suddenly people are urbanizing. Suddenly climate change is coming to the fore. So a number of things are converging at the same time as this particular time in history. And what we are going to see, if we don't manage it, an explosion from country to country as we go forward. So what are the things that we are facing? What is the convergence? And there's technology and demographics at the center. What they do is they lead to a number of paradoxes, certainly, that we'll see. They lead to innovation, because technology also innovates. It gives you, for example, we would not have been able to manage all the traffic and all of our information, etc., if technology didn't give us a computer, didn't give us all of the other things. And in the next 20, 30 years, there'll be phenomenal developments in technology that will allow us to handle a lot more human problems. So there'll be a lot of innovation. And then interdependence. The world is now an interdependent place. So if Bonaparte in Liberia is in New York the next day, just because somebody got an aeroplane. So we're now an interdependent world. So if you just take all of that, interdependence through globalization of information, globalization of capital, climate change and its impact, depletion of limited resources, common security threats, evolving norms of global governance. Now let me just say, even on security threats, and shocking as what ISIS is doing, being like, it's not unusual. It's not something that has not happened for a long, long time. I mean, beheadings have taken place forever in history. Yeah, in England. They beheaded people, you know. If you go to the London dungeons, you'll see all those things that were used to behead people. It's called asymmetrical warfare. And we're in the middle of asymmetrical warfare. So it's not something that you said that we see it more graphically, and now because of information and new media, you see it every day, all the time, but it's been happening for a long time. Doesn't make it right, of course. The paradox is, on the one hand, unprecedented economic wealth and global decline in absolute poverty. So we're at an unprecedented level of economic wealth today. Rising life expectancy and declining child mortality across the globe. Decline of intra-state warfare and expansion of global governance and norms and institutions, and the expansion of internet as a unifying interconnecting tool. But on the other hand, we have a rapid rise in social and economic inequality within and between countries. Our country is a typical example of inequality. Environmental degradation and depletion of limited food and water reserves. Remember, in Southern Africa, we're in a drought zone. Asymmetrical warfare and massive refugee IDP populations will continue. And then transnational globalized crime and security threats. Innovation, we're going to see huge innovation in medicine that will help us. Education, huge innovation that will allow us to educate millions of people much more easily through technology and that. And then urbanization, there'll be new solutions for traffic congestion, security, delivery of basic services through technology. And here's the complexity that we're going to have to get to deal with. It's driven by the convergence of a number of forces, demographic shifts, exponential population growth and generational shifts. Okay? Our own policies are being affected by generational shifts, as you will see. Climate change, extreme weather events, declining water resources, rapid and unplanned urbanization. You see, urbanization, like we get in Kenya, Lagos, Johannesburg, all of the big cities, is not coupled with housing, with sanitation, with provision of water, with education, with employment. This is where your problems start to arise. Growing inequality and unemployment, unstable transitions in local and global governance, changing nature of security threats, cyber threats, for example, all of the new things we are seeing, and then the vulnerability of global and local economic markets. Because if you look at when oil prices fell 50%, it just killed Venezuela, Iran, Russia, and then if you look on the continent, Nigeria just wiped out Nigeria's GDP. You know, so huge problems that we face, and that kind of thing has a knock-on effect. Understanding the complexities, governance is at the core challenge of the conflict that we face. Socioeconomic inequality, the poverty emerged from poor governance, the amplified social challenges and environmental challenges, and then the challenges are accelerated and reinforced by conflict and instability and global shocks. Now, the shift from single-party states into multi-party democracy, the rise of coalition politics and heightened competition for political power has not been handled very well on the continent. So this sudden shift from one party state to multi-party democracy and coalitions is not so easy. Even here, we're not going to find it easy to manage coalitions. As politicians, you have not yet grasped how to manage coalitions and how to manage it in a constructive way so that we can continue to move forward as nations. And this is exacerbated tenfold in some of the other countries. Challenges for political parties, the shift from liberation movement, hegemonic political parties or fragmented, identity-driven parties and coalitions. This is South Sudan. This is where South Sudan problems sit right now. And the poor quality of governance and administrative institutions, inefficient policy implementation and service delivery, small and low tax bases, exclusive political processes and narrow policy outcomes. These are going to be the challenges that we'll face. Now here's what's going to happen. We're going to see a shift from wars on borders to wars in cities. Because of rapid urbanization, and then this convergence that we're talking about without the provision of services, and we are, you know, the ability that we have to provide these services is very limited. Because the urbanization is happening at a faster pace, and the demographic growth is happening at a faster pace than we can manage to keep up in the delivery of services. And that, yes, is what is leading to conflict. So 43% of all riots in sub-Saharan Africa are largely due to rising food prices. One drives protests on the continent, but Africa, poor delivery, service delivery. Labor strikes Cote d'Ivoire, Liberia, Nigeria, demands for political reforms, Egypt, Sudan, election-related disputes, huge election-related disputes, and then protests over the and then protests to safeguard social and cultural identity. And it's, I've got a few more slides and we'll end with that. The macroeconomic growth, of course, is growth is slowing globally. Broad macroeconomic weaknesses, the IMF says the world economy may not return to pre-recession growth rate over the long term. The USA is the only one that is growing currently. The Eurozone, the stagnation and fragility. China has shifted from investment-driven to consumption-driven, which has a huge problem for us because they don't have such an appetite now for all of the resources that we have, which means that prices will decline, commodity prices, again having a knock-on effect on the GDP of countries on the continent. And then emerging markets, uneven growth rates, highly impacted by declining performance of regional heavyweights, and then less demand for commodities. These are going to be our problems. Africa and the world, positive growth rates, but unevenly spread. One-third of the countries have growth rates above 6%. African exports globally only account for 3.5% of global exports. Okay? 69% of that is raw material. So we're not exporting very big areas. And the problem with that is people are unemployed because they're not having factories that are producing finished goods. We're not industrial. So we're just sending out, you know, Nigeria is paying 29 rand a litre for fuel. A country that's the largest exporter in Africa of fuel. They're paying twice what we're paying for fuel. That's why they had problems recently 2 weeks ago in Nigeria. The rate of economic growth is highly correlated with said in global development. Remittances from the diaspora, 67 billion, is larger than ODA. So what we get from foreign government in terms of aid is far out of by what foreign, what Africans are sending from the rest of the world in. Africa loses 58 billion in illicit financial outflow, and then 70% of the working force is in the informal sector. The informal sector accounts for 20-40% of countries' GDP.
Okay, I'm going to skip these. Poverty and inequality, I think we know the statistics around there. Health, you've seen that. These are the statistics on Ebola. Education, which is a key factor. Sub-Saharan Africa spends 18.7% of government expenditure on education, highest in the world. Adult literacy 74%, youth literacy 64%. 10 million children drop out of primary school each year. Factors influencing a child's attendance in school, gender, location, household income. 6.2 million quality teachers are needed by 2030 to meet the youth problem. They're not going to meet that target if we don't do something radically. Gender equality, food and water security is going to become a major problem on the continent. And then, of course, climate crisis, most of climate change is going to impact negatively on Africa. This is what you're going to see, radicalized and militant non-state actors. They are going to increase. Part of that problem is the ideological gap. There's a serious ideological gap on the continent, and that ideological gap is being filled by political Islam. Consequences for conflict in Africa. State fragility relapses into violent conflict. Regional spillover of internal conflict. The strain of refugee and IDP influxes on governments and ecosystems. Proliferation and spread of small arms and light weapons. Transnational crime, violent extremism and terrorism. So this is what we're going to see. How are we going to do the silencing the guns? This is an AU ambition by 2020 to silence all the guns in Africa. Now what it means is not that we will end conflict, but at least we should end armed conflict on the continent. We're going to have to do that by improving governance and then ensuring that we are in tune with what is happening globally so that continental developments are in sync with global developments and then pursuing long-term plans. So, development is a long-term agenda. We have to sharpen our skills to mitigate conflict in the short term. And what you will be facing as a committee is a proliferation of these conflicts on the continent over the next couple of years, and South Africa will have to respond to both. Thank you very much.
Because this is an issue.
I leave it on the computer.
Thank you very much, Dr. Golden. Now, you remember earlier on I made a proposal that, he made a proposal that we could invite him and he could make the same presentation, then we engage that presentation. But what I suspect we should do is that we either now or next time you come back, you give us this information. A public speaker, the debaters, the people who talk to the public, either on education, how our continent looks like or how our South Africa looks like in a particular sector, skills-wise, youth, what are the threats, what are the opportunities, and how society has leadership or to inform our own debate in the National Assembly and so that we are more informed and listened as we debate. So, with that, I want to start that we will negotiate with you and see how you could be invited again. Now, honorable members and the colleagues, is it possible that we draw to a close of our engagement for today so that we allow the two of us, me and Khadija, to, because we have three ministers, the other side were invited, and other stakeholders. So. Yeah. I think. Now, or see, there any presentation? Okay. The meeting is again. Thank you very much. Thank you.